The Kentucky legislature is winding down with less a week to go, and there are several bills that deal with public schools, parental rights, and the protection of minors. One of the leaders in the Kentucky State Senate advocating for these issues is State Senator Lindsay Titchener. Senator Titchener's from Oldham County. She's a realtor, former missionary and disaster relief organizer, community mobilizer, and a teacher. She's sponsoring several important bills this legislative session, including restrictions on sexually oriented businesses and the Kentucky Women's Bill of Rights. Senator Titchener, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hey, we were just talking before we began the program about an important bill you introduced earlier in the session to restrict minors from sexually oriented performances and specifically dealing with drag shows. I had a chance to testify in that bill a couple weeks ago. That bill's coming up tomorrow. Tell us, first of all, why you sponsored that bill. What motivated you to do that?
Well, I sponsored this first last year, and although it passed the Senate, it didn't make it all the way through, and it got held up in the House. So I reintroduced this bill, and really it came out of starting to see what have always been adult performances make their way into the public sector and being marketed as family friendly. And we were seeing this in the state of Kentucky and various cities. Obviously, we've seen it in other states. There's just been this uptick under the guise of compassion and inclusivity to bring forward to children performances that aren't really made for children. And in a way to normalize that behavior, to normalize that performance, and to desensitize children to it. So the way that this bill was drafted was really to put a restriction statewide around all adult-oriented businesses and put in place how far they could be from any business or school or church, library where children would be present, put in some guidelines, some zoning restrictions, and just put into place a statewide standard. Oftentimes, a business will move into an area, and if the county isn't ready for it, they don't have the zoning set in place yet. So this would just already have that in place, and it allows also for local jurisdictions, local governments to have that jurisdiction of strengthening and tightening those zoning laws as they see fit.
Of course, this bill passed your committee. It passed the full Senate. However, not all of your colleagues agreed with this. One of the committee members, State Senator Karen Berg from up in your neck of the woods, spoke out against it in committee, and she said that children, minors, somehow can benefit from sexually explicit performances. Where do you begin with something like that? It used to be that most adults said this is not appropriate. I was in the committee hearing, like I mentioned. I didn't expect to hear something like that. But where do you begin the conversation when somebody that's in elected office has the mindset that kids can benefit from sexually explicit performances?
It really is a little bit dumbfounding when you actually hear that come from somebody's mouth. And their response is, how? How do they benefit? What is the end goal? And that's one of the questions that I raised last session and continue to raise this session. Why would it need to be in front of children? What is the purpose of being in front of children? Are we not advertising? We don't advertise in other places for this type of business to reach children. Why all of a sudden is this a business and a model and a performance that children have some need of that they've never had a need of before? And in my opinion, the only reason would be to desensitize children to things that are of a sexual nature. And to hear that come out of a senator's mouth is a little bit surprising. It's not the most surprising thing that has come out of that senator's mouth, but it is always an interesting topic when you bring up things of a sexual nature to hear the other perspective of why they think kids might need it. And, you know, obviously we're on the other side of that completely.
Another bill that you are sponsoring related to child protection or protecting minors is Senate Bill 249, and it would require age restrictions on social media use or parental permission. I don't know where that is, but the reality is that social media is not a safe place for kids. There are predators that are online. They look at children's Instagram accounts or their Facebook pages, and kids are vulnerable. Part of this bill, Senate Bill 249, it would require sex offenders who have committed a criminal offense against a minor to register so that they can be tracked and keep, really, essentially, I think you're trying to keep them away from children's social media pages. What is the status of Senate Bill 249?
249 will actually be heard tomorrow in committee in VMAP, in the Veteran Military Affairs and Public Protections. So it's a very simple measure to, along the lines of every other thing that they that a sexual predator would have to do for the sex offender registry list, they just add on that they have to use their legal name on social media sites. And, you know, if you are a predator and you are online, you're not going to put your legal name out there. So this would put into place that if they're on the registry, that's a requirement. You cannot have a profile on a social media account under a hidden identity. You'd have to use your legal identity.
Maybe I was mistaken. Were there age restrictions or parental permission requirements for minors to use, or is that a different bill?
That is a different bill, yes. So we're working towards getting, this was the age verification for online purposes, specifically for pornographic sites. That was filed in the House, and also I filed a version of it in the Senate, and we're trying to get creative towards the end of the session to get that one moved through.
And that's Senate Bill 276 that you're referring to.
I believe so.
Access to online pornography, yes. There's been a discussion about that. Now, Lindsay, some opponents of this say that it infringes on free speech rights. They're saying that if you have any kind of restrictions on social media websites, it's a violation of that social media company's freedom of speech. Where do you start with that?
I don't think targeting children for pornographic content is a free speech issue at all. And I believe the Supreme Court has ruled in that manner as well. When you're talking about minors, free speech is different. A sexual offender loses free speech rights when they have been convicted of sexual crimes against minors. And this is in the same vein. And we need to make sure that we're putting in any way that we can. Online it's so pervasive of avenues that kids can go down and get trapped into terrible situations. And we've seen just horrific stories come out of some of that. But what we saw just last week in Texas, Pornhub pulled out of Texas because a bill like this went through. And that is an interesting thing when you think their business is built on pornography. And because they cannot offer it to children in the state of Texas, they've pulled out of the state. So that tells you all you need to know about what that industry is about. They're about targeting their future market. And so they do go after children.
Younger and younger children are exposed to pornography. And that's because children have access to smartphones or iPads at very young ages. And as it is right now, there are no restrictions, there are no protections for minors as far as accessing pornographic sites. So, Lindsay, I commend you for leading on this bill. I've said to you before, if Commonwealth Policy Center can help in any way to forward this and to advance this bill, please let us know. Protecting our children is important. Keeping harmful material from them is important. And we already do it in other areas, by the way, right? We keep alcohol, tobacco. They're not allowed to go into actual strip clubs. But here we're talking about this wild west of the internet where social media is out there and you have websites like Pornhub, and kids need to be, they don't need to be involved with that. We need to protect our children. They are vulnerable, and there are very real predators out there who would do them harm. So Lindsay, I commend you in leading the way on this. Are you optimistic, by the way, that these bills will pass? Do they have movement in the legislature?
They do. Yeah. I'm very optimistic. That doesn't mean it'll happen, but I'm going to have to stay optimistic. Otherwise I wouldn't keep working on it. No, I really do. I think we're starting to get a grasp on the effects of what social media and what pornography is doing to kids, this intentional reach to sexualize kids. We're starting to see some of the results of that, and it's not healthy. And you talk about just it's the Wild West online, and I cannot emphasize enough the parents' role is so important. There's only so much state law can do. And if a parent is not able or not involved in protecting their kids and putting measures up on social media, they will very likely see their children become victims. That's our job as parents, and we can't get lazy, and devices have made us a little bit lazy in our parenting. And I'm just as guilty as anybody else.
No, that's very good. And we need to be reminded that we need to be proactive. And as parents, we need to protect our children. It's not the same society that you and I grew up in. It's a very different culture, different society. And kids are more vulnerable today than they ever have. This is a good pivot towards the next bill, the Kentucky Women's Bill of Rights. And it speaks to the culture changing. And in specifically, this bill speaks to the moral compass, a compass of objective reality, if you will, that has been just, we've forgotten it. And it, your bill, the Kentucky Women's Bill of Rights, would define boy, equal, female, girl, male, man, sex, and woman. And it would also prohibit any state or local law, regulation, or ordinance from treating males or females unfairly from similarly situated members of the opposite sex. Essentially, it would keep males out of girls' restrooms and locker rooms and female-only spaces and vice versa. I think it's based on objective biological reality. It's based on the differences between the sexes and the need for same-sex spaces. The question I have to you, there's a couple of questions. One is, what kind of response are you getting from your colleagues in the state Senate?
This one's a little more frustrating, I'll say. From a woman's perspective, what we're dealing with right now in society is an erasure of womanhood and all that we have fought for to have equal acknowledgement. Men and women are not equal. We're very different, and we all bring to the table great qualities, but we are not the same. There are differences between us, which is why we've had to fight for that protection of our private spaces. That's why we've had to fight for our own sports. We cannot compete with men. They are stronger. That's just the way it is. And what we're watching as men, under the guise of compassion that they have their transgender, decide that they want to be a woman, all of a sudden we have to give up all the ground that we have gained. And that's just maddening as a woman that we have to do this. We have to be in this fight. And the most shocking part of it all is the feminist movement, which typically leans far left, has just jumped on the bandwagon to completely erase all the ground that they've made. And I can't say that in the General Assembly, I don't feel like there's a lot of, that we all are on the same page, but it's not seen with an urgency that I see it. And so it's a little bit of an uphill battle right now. I think we just need to keep on bringing the issue forward. And one of the really simple parts of the bill would be that if there's any data that's recorded for crimes or enrollments into schools or any type of data that they have to collect, they need to distinguish that it's male or that it's female. And one story comes to mind. There was a fight, a school fight, and it was listed as a girl fight. It wasn't a girl fight. It was a transgender. It was a boy beating up a girl, but it got dismissed because it was just a girl fight. You see how that can be, how we can get into some trouble there if we don't make sure to distinguish the difference, because of course you don't ever want to see a man beating up a woman, but now all of a sudden it's okay as long as it's a trans woman, then they can beat up a woman. And they're still very much physically different. They're just physically different, and they're going to be physically different no matter how much hormones you take. Your bodies just are developing in a different way. So I'm going to keep fighting for this bill. I don't see it moving this session, but I think it's something that unfortunately we have to get into our statutes now that the definitions are being taken over and redefined. We've got to go back to natural law and just get it in the books.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you. If you're just joining us, you're tuned into the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with State Senator Lindsay Titchener, and we are talking about a number of bills in the Kentucky General Assembly that deal with parental rights, education, and child protection. Lindsay, regarding the Kentucky Women's Bill of Rights, are you hearing the argumentation that if a bill like that were passed, it could jeopardize federal funding, in particular with education? Because the Biden administration has threatened to pull federal education dollars from public schools that don't allow boys who identify as girls to join the girls' sports team or to use female-only spaces. Is that an argument that's being waged against this bill?
Absolutely. We saw that a few years ago in my district. The Department of Agriculture came down and basically threatened public schools. If you don't allow for children who identify to use whatever bathroom they want, then we're going to withhold your lunch money. It wasn't quite worded in that way, but that was exactly what it meant. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a big issue, which, again, it's so frustrating to say, are we just going to be erased for money? Our rights, our children, our granddaughters and daughters, are we just going to erase who they are and not defend them and stand up to protect them for money? The argument's not really happening right now, but I think that that's probably a reason that a lot of the schools just go ahead and bend to it because they're afraid. And, you know, I'm very, very hopeful that we will have a different administration. A lot of that stuff will change coming up in November. But until then, I think we're just in this fight. And there's a lot that we can learn. Europe's always a little bit further ahead on some of these wild things. And they have been, the battles they are fighting in the UK and Ireland over these issues are very, very surprising. And I want to be, as much as I can, ahead of the game, at least for the citizens of Kentucky and the women of Kentucky and the girls of Kentucky, to get something in place to protect them.
Lindsay, you have introduced a number of bills that address parental rights in education. I'll just rattle off a few of them. Senate Bill 169 establishes a process to recall a member of the local board of education. I think if a school board member were to do something egregious or against the will of a number of people in the district, they could recall that member and put them on a ballot. That's one bill. You have another bill that would, Senate Bill 168, a comprehensive bill that really has the theme of parental control in public schools. A couple of things that it does is that it removes the reference to minority members of school council. So it's a colorblind. I understand that's a colorblind proposal where you should not have forced diversity, if you will. It increases parental membership on the council from 2 to 3 members. It specifies that council members are subject to existing Kentucky statute that lists them as officers of an agency. Maybe we can dig into that. There's several provisions here in Senate Bill 166, but essentially the gist of it is to give parents more control and a greater voice on the council. Was this because you were seeing parents' perspective kind of pushed aside? What led to your proposal of Senate Bill 168?
Yeah, absolutely. The site-based decision-making councils, I believe, came into play, I couldn't even tell you what year. It was before my time. And the minority representation, although a good idea to make sure we have that representation, It's very challenging in a lot of districts to find someone to fill the position. And oftentimes, one of the first times I called the site-based member where my daughter was going to school, I said, hey, I have a question about the books. I said, hey, I have a question about these books. I want to know if they're in our school. She said, oh, I'm just a minority member. I don't do anything. They just needed somebody to fill the spot. So the reason I want to take that off is because I want parents who want to be involved. Shouldn't matter what your skin color is. If you want to be involved, here's the process. In that bill, I lay out just some guidance around elections for site-based council members. That has been just a hit or miss hodgepodge across every district in the state. And obviously, when you have nothing on paper, it opens up the door for maybe some mistakes to happen in an election or miscountings and no accountability. So, but the point, just if you want to be a parent and you want to be involved, here's how you run. Here's how you do it. Here's how the votes are counted. Here's how everybody's notified, and here's what your responsibilities are. And also in that broadening up the number of parents, it's always offset. You have three teachers, two parents, and then the principal. So you're always in an uphill battle unless you're a very convincing person and convince everybody on the board. So I would like for that to be an even number. Let the principal be the tiebreaker in that council. There's a lot of reform I think that needs to happen with our site-based councils, and really the purpose, they do a lot just on the local level specific to their individual school. So it just makes sense that a parent who is active and involved would have more representation than they do right now.
Very good. Another one of your bills, Senator Tichner, would require local boards of education to allow parents to orally recite passages from curriculum, books, things that are available in public schools. That sounds like common sense. Why is that bill needed?
That is an addition to what passed last session of SB 5, which put into place a process for parents to request that a book be removed from their school. Now, of course, when we started going after the books, the other side just loses their mind and says, we're trying to ban books. We want to ban books. And that's Nazi Germany, this, that, or the other. We want to ban inappropriate books from being in our schools. We need age-appropriate books. And that's what that was about. So this SB 5 last year put that in place, that process into place. And this is an extra measure on top of that. If you go through the process, you propose it to your principal and he says it gets to stay, then you appeal it to the board and they say it gets to stay. This is an extra measure to say, okay, I'm going to read this in front of the board. And if you tell me I can't read it or you stop me from reading it, then you acknowledge it's bad and it has to come out. And I will just put out, I don't know that that's going to move this session. But I think what we need is for parents to start using the process that's in place. If you see a book that is not appropriate for your school, go through the process that we have in place. We need the stories to see that what we have in SB 5 is or isn't working. And then we can move forward to strengthen that.
This bill came about from an issue you were involved with in Louisville, where a middle school had pornographic books available to its students in the library. Another one of a parent, concerned parent, brought this to the attention of the school, the teacher, the principal, eventually took it to the school board and was about to recite a passage when one of the school board members said, "No, you can't read that here because it's obscene," which, believe it or not, a school board member actually said that, and also at the same time defended that that book should be available in our public schools. I had a chance to look at a portion of that book, and I cannot unsee what I saw. Absolutely shocked at what was there in the book. And I'm even more shocked that parents and those in authority would somehow defend that. So, Lindsay, I'm going to move to something else that you just brought up. Conservatives, the parents who are concerned about appropriate material being shared with their children, they're accused of banning books. They're accused of wanting to keep out educational material from the rest of the kids in our public schools. Is this book banning?
No, this is not. This is age restriction on content, which is what we all should be focused on. What is appropriate for kids to see in their classrooms? And it's interesting, that book in particular that you're talking about, so many people at the beginning were just like, that's not in our schools, that's not in our schools. And we present, here's where it is. We found it in all of these schools. Say, well, it's not in the classroom, it's not in the classroom, it's not being taught, we're not teaching it. Just this week, the National Association or the North American Council for English Teachers, I believe is what it was, has an entire presentation on how to teach that book in the classroom, how to teach genderqueer for the classroom. So we went from it's not even in the school to now they're teaching them how it should be instructed. And this is the one, it has plenty of words that are not appropriate, but then it just has the images as well. And it's just so interesting when you fight this battle, and they come at you and they say, oh, this isn't an issue. It's not an issue. We prove it is. And then all of a sudden, now it's just a free for all. We're going to teach it in the classrooms. We're going to present it to children in a way that's inclusive or whatever. But this is not about banning books. And I would actually bring up the fact that it was the left in 2021 that was banning Dr. Seuss. So there's that.
I think that we can agree that there are some things that are appropriate for children to be exposed to, and there are some things that are just totally off limits. But when you're talking about sexually explicit, and in the case of the book, I want to say it was Genderqueer or Lawn Boy, maybe it was a couple. I think there were a couple books in Louisville Middle School, but there were a couple that are absolutely, I think if you were to show the photographs and if you were going to show the dialogue there, 99% of people would say that's inappropriate for children. I think we can agree on that. I think the challenge, though, is to overcome this being stigmatized or being labeled as anti-intellectual, anti-free speech, that we're being book banners. And when we come across as really protecting the vulnerability of children and promoting age-appropriate material, that's where we need to begin the conversation on. But Lindsay, were you saying that when parents find this material in their schools, are you suggesting that they take it and share that material with the school board? Should they go and actually read it or show them excerpts?
Well, obviously they can if they want to do that. What SB 5 laid out was kind of a step-by-step process to oppose a book in the school. You would take it to your principal first, and then your principal can bring it before the site-based council. They can have discussion. And I don't have all of that memorized what the process is, but then if the principal deems that it's okay, then the parent can make an appeal to the board, and then the board would review it and then make that decision. And it even, I think, goes to the superintendent for an appeal there too. So there's methods that you can go about it. Personally, if you know your school board, if you don't know your school board, send them an email, send them a picture of it. It doesn't need to be a big public display of reading it and embarrassing everybody. I would venture to say the majority of people who sit on our boards, the majority, not all of them, would be opposed to these things being in their schools as well. And I think if you can just make sure they're aware that this is there, they can move forward and try to get it out. And then if they can't, then you go a different option. And it might be that you go to a school board meeting.
State Senator Lindsay Titchener, I want to thank you for taking the lead on these important issues. God bless you. Keep up the great work.